Hey, what's happening? This is TC Carson, and you're listening to the FSF Podcast.
Hello, and welcome to the FSF Podcast. I'm Tim. I'm your host, and this, of course, is my trusty co-host, Ben Riley, the Hardy Healer.
Hello.
Over on TikTok. Our guest today, though, is somebody that we've been looking forward to getting on the show for quite some time. Don't worry, I got all my fanboying out of my system before I hit the record button. I did that on purpose. You may remember him as, what's that?
I don't know if he did though.
No, there's still more in there. I can feel it. It's bubbling up. I'm going to try and park it back down. But you may remember our guest as Kyle Barker in 108 episodes of Living Single. You may know him for his voice work in video games and animations like the God of War series as Kratos. You may know him in the movie U571, which is one of my all-time favorites, as Eddie, and I love him in that movie. But for many of us, including this here Star Wars nerd, he is the voice of Master Jedi Mace Windu in Star Wars animation and video games. Let's welcome the one, the only, TC Carson to the FSF Podcast. Welcome to the show, TC.
Thank you for the introduction.
Very excited to have you here.
Like I said in pre-show, when I said we've been wanting to get you on the show for a couple of years, we had tried a couple times, and your agent was always very kind, very, very pleasant. Hey, it's just not going to work right now. Try again. Yeah, we'd like to, you know, maybe try again. And then when he said, yes, we'd like to come on the show, I was like, so there.
Do that again. Do that again. Do that again.
Yeah, that was actually a pretty legitimate response to what had happened. My wife is like, what is going on? I'm like, we got TC Carson. She's like, okay. My wife and I have very, very different interests in life. I'm the sci-fi Star Wars, you know, comedy nerd. She loves British television and all this. Wow. Yeah. Pride and Prejudice is her thing. Not so much mine. So, yeah, big time into Bridgerton and stuff like that. That's not
I kind of
really
like Bridgerton too, though. I did. It was interesting.
I tried. Does that count?
Yes. Yes. Good. Absolutely. Good. Absolutely.
An effort was made. I did show up, watched one whole episode, and went, you know, there wasn't a single laser sword in that entire episode. My wife told me to get out.
No.
Yep. Same feeling behind it. It's not bad.
But there were black people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you didn't see black people in those kind of movies back then.
No. Oh, absolutely. That was one of the first things. I'm like, oh, this is actually really nice that they have people. And it's not just all one shade, you know, that kind of matches the back wall here.
They had...
I don't know what you're talking about, Ben.
No, you're really pink. It's okay.
Oh, it's mainly the light.
Leave me alone.
I'm so worried. I'm going to see through. Come on, Tim.
We digress.
I am a clear American over here. I am. Anyhow, like I was saying, we're very happy to have you here. We're big fans of your work and of your voice. But I have to start by asking you a two-part question. This is one I'd like to ask a lot of our guests when they come on, especially anyone who is even remotely Star Wars adjacent. So the two-part question goes like this. We're nerds. We love to hear origin stories, how people got to be who they are and how they kind of got from here to there. So in that origin story, you can tell us how as well, perhaps what was your entry point into the Star Wars fandom?
I remember the first movie, and I went with a good buddy of mine, and we stood in line, and it was more about my buddy's reaction, because he was very much into sci-fi and all of that, and he was like my brother. And so I said, okay, I'll go with you. But once I went the first time, then I made sure that I saw the movies after that. And what I liked about it, it was such a different world.
Right.
It was so different than anything we had seen before. And so there were no rules attached to it because it was so different. And I think that was the thing that drew me in.
Now, but for you personally, what were your origins as to getting into the arts and entertainment field? What were the things that motivated you? Was there somebody who influenced you when you were younger that said, hey, you know, you'd be really good at this XYZ thing?
Not really. I had a couple of teachers. There was a teacher in fourth grade who was the first teacher who put me on stage to sing. We were doing
fourth grade.
Yeah. No. Yeah. Yeah. Mr. Hoffenberg. we were doing an assembly, and I guess Hair was a big musical at that time.
Oh, sure.
We did Aquarius. And he asked me to do the lead. And that was the first time I had ever been on stage. And the reaction from the audience made me understand it was something that I really enjoyed doing. And there was a program in my grade school called the Title VI program at that time. And they brought arts and music and dance and theater to inner city kids after school. And that was the space that showed me that I could do these things. It saddens me today to know that public schools do not have this, and the government doesn't really care about what's happening in the public in school systems, period, right now, actually, sure. with all the shootings and all of that. But that was the thing that was my entrance into the arts in general. And if I had not had that, there was nobody necessarily in my family that was in the arts. There was nobody that was, you know, pushing me to do that. So those teachers, those programs helped me hone my skills and make it something that I really did want to do.
Yeah, I think I like your fourth grade experience over mine.
So in order for a character to become believable, whether you're voicing Mace Windu or you're playing a character on camera, we've had a lot of other actors come in and say you have to buy into who they are. Is there a process for you getting into character and making connections with the person you're playing?
It really... Okay, so for me, it's all about acting, right? And the first thing you do, you have to memorize what it is so you don't have to think about it. Mm-hmm. And then once you memorize it, then you talk to the director, the creative person, to find out what they are looking for. What is their vision of what this character is and what this scene is, what this moment is. And once you understand that and you understand the words, then you can put what you need to put on top of it. Finding Mace was a journey. We started out really close to who Sam is, because that's what they were looking for. That's how I auditioned for it. That's what they wanted. But as the series went forward, Dave was more malleable. He wanted me to be more involved in what it was. And so he allowed me space within the box. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of how Mace got to be who he is in Clone Wars right now. I think he's a nice combination of Sam and me.
Yeah, I can see that. And having watched Clone Wars as often as I have, I think, you know, now that you mentioned, I can see the transition in, you know, there's a little bit more of a rigid style, I think, in the first couple seasons. Mm-hmm. And then as it goes, it's more of a, I don't want to say that it's not still, it's still holding true to who I think Mace is, you know, because he's very much a no-nonsense type of Jedi. This is, you know, by the book, this is going to, you know, all these different things, but it seems to have more of a personal connection, I think, with the character towards the end of the series, with that character to other characters as things were happening, the connection that you don't see in the movies, in the live action movies.
Yes. Well, again, we got to record together, you know, and I got to know who these people were. Not only the characters, but who these people were. And sure. So knowing who the actors are, it's a freer space to create in. And so there is a different kind of connection. That's why I do like recording in a group situation, because things happen in a group situation that do not happen when you're by yourself and just saying five times, five different ways.
Yeah, there's no one to like play off of if you're the only one in the booth.
Right.
Right. I mean, yeah, if you were the only one there, there's no way you have a conversation about, you know, for like 10 minutes about wooden shoes. That just doesn't happen.
No, it doesn't. No.
Not at all. I mean, if it does, I mean, you might need to talk to somebody about that. But
but the fact that we all had a connection with them was funny to me.
Yes.
We all had a wooden shoe connection.
It is. That's kind of interesting.
What's the thing? You're only like 10 steps away from Kevin Bacon or something like that? You're like 10 connections away?
Is it 10 degrees of Kevin Bacon? Six.
Yeah, yep. 6 degrees.
6 degrees of Kevin. Yeah, same thing. You're 6 degrees from wooden shoes.
Getting clogged.
My God, you know what? You know what? Yeah, I heard that. Yeah, I did.
Yeah, that happened. Yeah, because we've had several actors tell us, TC, that sometimes it's not just, especially when it's a character that's been played by somebody else already. So like in your instance with Mace and Sam, trying to hold true with that. I want to say that it was Mick Wingert the first time we had him on the show. Mick Wingert has played Tony Stark for Marvel's in the What If series. And he also voices, or had been for the last few years, voicing Poe on Kung Fu Panda for Jack Black. And so he's taking two established characters and voicing them, you know. And he said that, you know, a lot of people, I think it was him that said that there was a lot of people would see it as restrictive, but he found a lot of freedom in playing characters that were already established because he knew what the parameters were. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense to you?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know the box you're working in.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it kind of, because it's not a character that you're trying to figure out on the fly. It's a character that already has the rules and the steps. So now it's like, okay, this is something he would do. This is something he wouldn't do. How does that inform your decision?
It's like, how do you color it? Like, you know, when you know who this person is, then you get to color what the moment is through this person's eyes. So once I understood who Mace was, and once I understood how to walk in the middle between me and Sam, then it's like, okay, so given the script, how do you color it? Given that, given what you know, how do you color it? And that's the fun. Like he said, that's the fun part. You know, and this is where I think a director, a real director, because Dave is a real director, a real director comes into play. You can actually sit and have a conversation about the different ways you could do this because you're this person. It's like, well, he could think about it like this, or he could think about it like this, or I could think about it like this. And giving a director those different choices, they can decide, okay, now let's keep him over here. So, okay, cool. Let's go. All right. So it really is about, once you know who the person is, then you can decide, just like you do in life, when situations occur, you can decide to either take the blue pill or the red pill.
Sure. No, that makes sense. All right, so TC, I, in doing research for you, what we like to call socially acceptable stalking, I found out a few things about you that I was not aware of before.
Oh, shit.
Like, yeah, here comes. No, honestly, I did not know that you were a singer.
Oh, wow.
I did not know, honestly. I knew you as an actor and a voice actor, but I did not know that TC Carson was a singer as well, and had like
with
a whole
that buttery smooth voice. You didn't know what they sang?
Oh, trust me, I fell down a rabbit hole, and you got a whole lot of listens and a subscription today on your YouTube channel. And I was very much enjoyed, or very much enjoying the music that I was listening to.
Oh, thank you.
Because now you have a lovely voice with an amazingly awesome deep register. The when you go into that low part of your voice, that mm-hmm. baritone, just that is just silk. And as I was listening to you, now I don't know if you know who this person is, but I was listening to you and I was sitting there thinking, he and Johnny Gill need to do a duets album and just. And because I'm a big Johnny Gill fan, have been, loved him from before he was with New Edition, loved mm-hmm. him in New Edition, love him still. I love his solo stuff. I just, and you guys, to me, not that I'm putting you in a musical box here, but as I was listening, you know, especially when you were singing some of the older classics that you were singing, like you were singing some Al Jarreau, you were singing some, you sang My Funny Valentine, you sang, I can't remember what the other song was, but there was you had an original called Come Together. I mm-hmm. listened to that as well. And as I was listening to each one of those, I was like, that'd be cool to hear hit, you know, TC sing this and hear Johnny come in, like, you know, back him up with that. And I don't know. It's just, I could hear it playing in my head. Anyway, with all of that being said.
Thank you. Thank you though. I'm glad you enjoyed the music. I really am. That's my first love is music.
Excellent. So who were your musical influences growing up, and how do you feel that your musicality influences your other work?
Voice work is like music to me because it is about the sound. It's not about face. It's not about movement. It's about what does it sound like? What is the rise and fall of the sentence? How do you convey the emotion of what that is with before they put the animation to it? Because your voice will inform the animation. So it is like music to me. Early on, I grew up listening to a lot of jazz as a young person. So my mother, on Saturdays, she would get up and turn the music on and we'd clean the house. And she'd play Ella and Billie Holiday and Sarah and Nat King Cole and Coltrane and Miles and Thelonious Monk and, you know, Lou Rawls and all these different people. And then as I got older, you know, I started listening to Michael Jackson, Jackson 5 and the Spinners and Earth, Wind & Fire and that whole generation of music. But when I found Al Jarreau, that was the person, him and Bobby McFerrin showed me there was a different way to sing. That it wasn't just about the lyrics, but you could make music without words. And again, I had been exposed to it with Ella and with this, you know, with Sarah and the Scatting and the Lambs and Ross and all of them. So I knew of it, but I had never heard anybody approach it like Al Jarreau did or like Bobby McFerrin did. And so that showed me it was a different way to sing, and that put me along the path that I'm on now.
That's an amazing answer. That's a lot of musical influences. those are some amazing bands, and just the sense of rhythm that you would get from having the imprint of those musicians on you, you know, and listening to them and studying from them. Yeah, I can see where that would be a big influence.
Mm-hmm.
For sure.
I'm also happy that my family wasn't the only one that put on really nice jazz to clean the house.
I still do it. I put music on when I'm cleaning up. I put music on.
Same. I still do. My mom did it, but she for some reason was confused and thought that we liked Elvis. We don't like Elvis.
She was confused. She liked Elvis.
We know. Oh yeah, that was pretty
obvious. Everyone is well aware.
It really was not about you.
it absolutely was not about me. No, God, there's a picture of my older brother and I. He was living in Memphis at the time, and we went to the Mississippi Theater there. not theater, but museum. It's called the Mississippi River Mud Museum or something like that. Anyway, and they've got a whole thing in there dedicated to Sun Records, because that's where, you know, Sun Records was from. And they've got some Elvis stuff in there. And there's one of those really god-awful Elvis sparkly jumpsuits in there. And my brother and I are standing one on each side of it going, you know, yeah, mm-hmm. we could. Oh, God, I still to this day cannot stand Elvis Presley.
That is hilarious. But for me, growing up, like watching Elvis Presley in these musicals was one of the things that made me want to do theater. Made me want to do musical theater. Watching him, watching Ben Vereen.
Okay.
Made me want to do musical theater.
Okay.
You know?
I mean, it makes sense, because like whenever there was an Elvis show, it was a spectacular to. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of people that've gotten into that kind of stuff.
And I'm a little older than you guys, so you know, it's an era long gone away. It was back in the day, back there.
Back over yonder.
Over there, yeah.
and just for argument's sake, the one song is Can't Help Falling in Love. That's the only song by Elvis I really do like. Past that.
Think about
it. Yeah. Other than that, I can skip it. You know, I'm good. I've heard them all at nauseam anyway, so.
Yeah.
You didn't like Jailhouse Rock?
Oh, God, no.
Don't worry. My Elvis Presley was Jimmy Buffett.
Ah, no Jimmy Buffett, huh?
I mean, they got some good stuff, but you can only hear Cheeseburger in Paradise for the millionth time before you start hitting your head into a brick wall. They did some good stuff, but bad stuff too. Anyway,
we've made another left.
It's okay. We're three lefts make a right. We're all going back.
Okay.
Speaking of going back, we were talking just before about kind of taking over a role done by someone else, and you have the opposite with another one of your characters, Kratos in God of War. You were Kratos, powerful and just absolutely amazing, and I loved all of the God of War games. Now, with the newer God of War games, Kratos is voiced by Christopher Judge. Mm-hmm. What is your opinion on the newer games and the newer take on Kratos?
I think Christopher's doing a great job. And, you know, I tell people, you know, work comes and goes. Nothing is permanent, especially when you're talent. And the industry changed. When we were first doing God of War, they needed two people to do it. I was the voice, and then there was another actor that did the mocap. And that worked. Now we're in a different space. After the pandemic and all of that, we're in a different space. And you try to minimize. And Christopher Judge has a great voice, and he's big. He moves like a big guy. And so he can do the mocap. And so now you've taken two people and you've broken it down to one person, and you can pay that person more because you don't have to pay two people. So it's still a win-win. It's a win-win for everybody. Mm-hmm. Am I disappointed that I didn't get a chance to voice the new games? Absolutely. But I totally understand why. I'm a little guy. I weigh 170 pounds soaking wet. I don't move like a big person. It's just it's the evolution of what it is.
That's an interesting take. I mean, again, everything you did as Kratos, I must have played God of War 1 maybe like over a dozen times before the second one came out, and then it just every time there was a newer version, I kept going. Mm-hmm. I almost immediately noticed in the newer one, I'm like, hang on. It's not the same voice, but there's a big distinction between like the original ones and then the newer ones of Kratos is aggressive and powerful and is the god of war. And in the newer ones, he is dad of boy.
He's a kinder, gentler Kratos.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, kinder, gentler. Well, in the beginning, when I got the job, the years that I voiced Kratos were kind of tumultuous for me.
Ooh.
And so those sessions, I was able to channel the anger and the rage into the voice work. So a lot of things that you feel are real because I was, that energy was in me. And I think that's the difference with what the games are today. I think because I was creating a character, I had more space to be. And because I had never done anything so aggressive, so angry, I was able to tap into that piece of me. It was like therapy, really. It was like
therapy. I was going to say.
It really was. I could go in for 4 hours and holler and scream and walk out and be like, okay, let's go get a drink.
Right? Yeah.
I tell this story. At one point, I think it was the third game. There was a scene that they wanted to put in of Kratos being tortured, and they had the animation for it. And they showed it to me, and they said, so we want you to voice this and, you know, holler and scream and, you know, like he is being tortured. I was like, okay. And I believe that this was after my mom had passed.
Mm-hmm.
And I watched the tape, watched a couple of times and said, okay, let's go. And 2 seconds in, a voice said, so what you going to do this or you going to do? What you going to play with this or you going to do this? What are you doing? What are you going to do? And I allowed myself to let that be. And by the end of the take, I was in the corner crying. I couldn't stop crying for a minute. So I finally got my shit together. And I came out of the booth. And they would look at me like, said, are you okay? I said, I'm good. I'm fine. I just, you know, hey, I mean, I did it. So you know, if I was going to do it, I was going to do it, you know. And the game came out and I said, so how'd it go? They went, well, I said, what? What's the problem? They said, we didn't use it. I said, why? He said, it was too real.
Mm.
Everybody that listened to it, it made them too uncomfortable.
Oh, wow.
She said, it was too real. It was too visceral for people. They couldn't take it. I was like, okay, I got paid, so we good.
You got paid, you got to work some stuff out your head.
Yeah.
You know, yeah.
Got some shit off. No.
Yeah.
I mean, it definitely beats screaming into a pillow when you could just sit there and go, Zeus!
Right. Right. Exactly. Exactly.
Wow.
You'd be surprised how many people come up to me at Comic Cons and want me to do that. I think the next time I talk to my manager about this, I think I'm going to have a recording on my computer. And just when they ask, I'll just press the button.
Just have a soundboard. Just be like, "Hang on a minute."
Oh, you know what you could do. You could get a couple of the buttons, you know, like they use for dogs for training, where they tap the button and the dog can say it. Like you could hit the button, record yourself saying some line from Mace Windu, and okay, that's the purple button, and there's the red button for Kratos, and then there's the you know.
That's all it. Your famous lines just on a piece of wood. Someone says, hey, say the thing.
And all. I bet you, and this is just the thought. I mean, you could do it for free if you wanted to, but you could be like, it's $1 to tap the button. And people will pay $1 to tap the button.
They tap a dollar. A dollar?
You know, people will hit that at least 100 times.
Oh, yeah.
He's fine.
I'm just saying, I was just throwing a number out there, but yeah, you can go 5, 10, you could probably get $20 at most cons, you know, for somebody to hit.
But It's $5.
He let me hit the button, and the button said the thing. He did the thing.
Even better, when you go to those cons, sell the buttons $50 a piece.
And you could have it at home, huh?
Uh-huh. You can go home and be like, look, it's DC Carson. Boop, Zeus.
You know?
We might be onto something here.
Hang on, he's texting his lawyer. Seeing if I get royalties for the idea.
I just put it in my notes.
There you go. No, that's I think you could, because I mean, I could see people walking around the con, you know, they go to take pictures with, you know, with their buddies, and they're in their cosplay and they're hitting their button.
That's a good idea. Merch. It's all about merch. It's all
there
about
you go.
It absolutely is. Absolutely. You got, you know, hey, somewhere, somehow you got to make that a couple extra bucks. You might as well do it there. So, all right, TC, I'm going to dive into a little bit of territory that I don't often dip my toes because I am not of this world. Okay. That world is the world of fashion. Now, I am very grateful that today you decided to slum it and look like me wearing the hoodie. Thank you, sir. Much appreciated.
Well, you know, it's a gamer thing.
But all the research I was doing of you, man, you dress sharp. I mean, when you're out and you're out for pictures, you got these suits on and you look amazing. And my question for you is, because I'm sitting here in track pants and a hoodie. That's my day. That's my daily. That's what I do. Mm-hmm. I can throw on a shirt and tie every once in a while, clean it up, try to make it look like somebody loves me. But my wife loves it when I say that about her, by the way. My question is, do you have like a style guru, somebody that helps you with your fashion choices, like, you know, a fashion Sherpa, shall we say, or are you just that classy of a dude?
A little bit of both.
A little bit of both?
A little bit of both. Like my personal style, I curate myself. So the looks you see on the red carpet or when I'm out, I pretty much curate them myself. I have some designer friends and they give me pieces, but okay, I'll put them together myself. When I was on Living Single, I had an amazing team, Ceci and Craig Anthony, and they dressed me. They dressed Kyle for Living Single. And I really credit them with his style. And they took their cue from what I wanted. I really wanted to make sure that he was connected to his Africanness and his community. So every time, every chance we got, we used Black designers, we used African designers. We brought in HBCU sweatshirts, you know, and jackets. Cool. Things that we just to promote our culture. Because I think right now, especially right now, we're so taught that it doesn't matter, that in order to be successful, in order to be in the quote-unquote in-group, you have to spend all this money on Gucci and Prada and Chanel and red bottoms and all these things. Right. And all these things, again, I'm not coming against these designers because everybody's got to make their money. Great clothes, nice designs. But I'm looking at what is in my community that is comparable.
Sure.
What can I buy that's going to support somebody that lives in my city as opposed to somebody that lives in Europe? Fair. How can I support designers that are local, that are here, that are working to get their product out? Because Gucci don't need me. Mm-hmm. Prada right. doesn't need me. Chanel doesn't need me. They've got their audience already built in. But how can I use what this is to help promote somebody that's got good designs and nobody knows about?
I love that.
So that's a long answer to the fashion thing. I do have great designer friends, and I have a couple of friends that they shop all the time. So they'll call me and go to this site and buy this. They got your size, go buy this. I was like, okay, I'll go buy it. And I go buy it. And usually I like it because they know my style. So I usually go buy it. But that's how I come up with the looks that you see. And I went to Africa and I brought back a lot of fabrics and had people make things for me and stuff like that.
Very cool. Yeah, there wasn't one picture that I saw of you where I was like, boy, he's looking pretty rough in that. Who put him in that? Yeah, not one, not a single one. Every one of them, I was like, yep, man, he got me on that one.
Oh, well, you know, again, you take pictures though. You got to look, you know, you're going to take pictures. I even shaved for y'all today.
you're ahead of me.
Oh boy. But you type in your name to like Google Images and it's just dressed to the nines in every single shot. It could be a random like tabloid picture from down the street and you're just perfect pose, perfect outfit, everything.
Google Images and see what you're talking about.
I don't know if you ever saw the show, TC, but you ever watch the show How I Met Your Mother?
Yes.
Okay. Neil Patrick Harrison's character, Barney Stinson, every time a picture was taken of him, he was always like, just like, posed perfectly. Suited. That's you, sir, right there. Every picture I see of you, mm-hmm. you're like, looking good. You're a good-looking man, sir.
Thank you, sir. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Yes, sir.
Oh, boy. You good over there, Tim? Getting a little...
I'm good. Little... Yeah.
Okay.
Hey. You got some water? You okay?
Mm-hmm. I can tell another man he's a good-looking man. I'm confident.
Yes, you can.
We need more of that.
Well, this whole... I think men are moving away from this whole toxic masculinity and just being
God, people. I hope so.
Just being people. I mean, stop trying to be what somebody tells you need to be and just be you.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah. Because that's one of the reasons why, and I'm going to bring Lord of the Rings into this because that's every fabric of my being, but Aragorn is the pinnacle of what a man is. They are strong and brave, but can be caring. They can be kind. Mm. They can cry. They can give another person a kiss on the forehead without it being awkward or seen as less manly. And just, I'd like to be close to that at some point.
Well,
my whole life revolves around Lord of the Rings.
it really does.
Does it really?
Oh, he's tying it down right now. There's an Aragorn rant bubbling under the surface.
Last year, I marathoned the extended editions of The Lord of the Rings 3 times, which is a low number for me.
How long are those?
13 hours total.
I'm looking at you right now. How long are those?
Hang on, let me... They're about 13 hours.
This side, okay.
Yeah, there you go.
All right.
Hello. It's definitely a marathon, and doing that several times a year it takes up some time. But anyway.
If it makes you happy, why not? You're not hurting me, why not?
Exactly.
So we have a very interesting question now. We have our Facebook group, which has over 200,000 members, which really good for us. And our members are big fans of memes and mashups and funny stuff. So if you were to take 2 of the characters you have played, live action, animated, whatever, who would you pick to defend the universe from evil?
Oh, definitely Kratos and Mace. Definitely Kratos and Mace. Mm. Mace has a level head. Kratos just kills everything. So, you know.
But yeah, I was kind of thinking when we put this question together for the interview is that, I didn't play a whole lot of the God of War games. I played 1 or 2, but I was definitely more in Star Wars was definitely more my thing. I played a lot of the Star Wars games. I watched... possibly unhealthy amount of Star Wars. We won't talk about that right now. My therapist knows the number. We'll keep going with that. Anyway, but I was absolutely thinking that Mace has to be part of it just because of who he is, what he is, his ability to do the right thing, but yet hold that line right on the edge of, but knowing what needs to be done, even if it's not the exact right thing for the moment, this is what has to be done. And yeah, because I even think about how in the movie Revenge of the Sith, he was ready to kill Palpatine. Mm-hmm. It may not have been the right thing. The Jedi Order said that, you know, he has to stand trial, has to do all these things. And Mace is like, we're going to take him out now. He's got to go.
Meanwhile, that's Kratos' default, is just, nope, they're done.
You know, Kratos is just like, kill them all.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just kill them all.
Just sort them out later.
Kill them all.
Now, out of curiosity, that's your A team. That's like the best possible choice to defend the universe. Can you give us like your Z team, like the worst possible option of the characters you've played to defend anything?
I'm sitting here trying to figure out other characters that I've played. You're asking, I should have done the research on myself before we started this with you.
Man, we'll link you your own IMDb page.
I know, right? And I don't have anybody here. My team is not here, so they can't help me. Even though I love him, the father from Clifford the Big Red Dog, sweet guy. Not the shoot 'em up kind of person. Mm-hmm. And who else? Who else? Who else? Oh, what was that character? It was a game. The thing that not Ving Rhames, Vin Diesel did with the animated thing. It was a Hawaiian. Oh, I can't remember the name of the animated feature. It was a feature, and I did a video game for it. I'm going to go back. The character in another Goofy movie. Him.
Okay.
Yeah, I can't think of what it was, but yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, those two.
All right. We'll go with those.
Let me.
I would say if you didn't go with your character from a Goofy movie, I was going to suggest Cobra Bubbles from Lilo and Stitch.
That's what I was thinking of. That's the Ving Rhames, Vin Diesel character.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah. That's Cobra
Bubbles. Oh, yeah.
Lilo and Stitch. That's you.
That would be, well, I mean, Cobra Bubbles could probably do good enough to defend the universe, but when their partner is just the dad from Clifford, I don't know how much work is going to get done.
Cobra, do you really want to do that?
Talk about being set up for disaster.
Let's use our words. Okay. Let's use our words.
Just nice. Cobra standing there just seething.
You don't want to do that. No, you don't.
Oh, boy. That's great. So we got the number one pick, Kratos and Mace Windu.
Absolutely.
Least option is Cobra Bubbles and the dad from Clipper.
The dad.
Just okay. The name, Cobra Bubbles. Come on.
Could be worse. All right, TC, it's time for what we like to call our silly question. This is the last question.
That wasn't it?
No, that wasn't it. No. That should tell you how silly it actually is. All right, so we started asking this question of our guests because we thought that it was a shame that at a certain point in life, people stop caring to ask you this question. So, TC Carson, what's your favorite dinosaur?
What's that? Tyrannosaurus Rex? Is that the one?
Yeah.
Oh, the one with the little arm?
The little arm, T-Rex. Big head,
little arms.
Yeah, yeah, because you got the little arms.
Now, interestingly enough, there is a theory going on that the arms are on backwards.
Say what now?
It. So,
wait,
in archaeology.
Wait.
Hang on. Okay.
Wait.
Mm-hmm.
It was to say what now? It was to say what now? Okay, go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
The theory is that T-Rex looks way more like a chicken than we give it credit for. It's not just a big lizard. So they put the arms on like this, but they're supposed to be going the other direction because they're supposed to be like wings. In the same way as if like you take a like chicken wings and point them forward, they look weird. Yeah, they're supposed to be in the back like a bird.
Well, hell.
Jurassic Park did a terrible job showing actual dinosaurs because they have way more feathers than we think, or at least than we have shown.
They're really close to birds. Mm-hmm. A lot of them are really close to birds. Yeah,
you're saying that T-Rex had feathers?
Yeah.
I need to do some reading. Holy crap! Okay.
Here's another thing. Go online, and do the comparison between the Jurassic Park T-Rex call and the archaeologically accurate sound of a T-Rex. It's nightmare fuel. Because you think Jurassic Park, it's just loud, just rah! Everyone's like, oh, that's scary. Trust me. Go on YouTube, you can find it. Just the accurate T-Rex sound is terrifying.
What is terrifying about it?
Just the sound that it makes. Like, imagine you're in like a dark forest and hearing that in the distance. It's like cryptid, like Mothman is chasing after you kind of feeling.
Well, thank God I won't have to experience that. Okay. So...
that right there, that
moving
yeah.
right along.
Well,
yes,
he's over there like, hey, would you look at the time, I got a thing to catch.
Went from a silly question to just really interesting facts.
It's like, okay.
But anyway,
like, okay, bye.
Anyway, Mr. Carson, thank you so much for being on our show today. Where can our wonderful listeners go and find more about you and everything about your work?
Well, if you go to official TC Carson on Instagram, everything is listed there. But if you put my name in and you see my fake, because people are doing fake shit every day. So if you go to my Instagram, all of my contacts are listed there. There's tccarson.com. There is official TC Carson, which is the Instagram handle. On Facebook is TC Carson. Yeah, I think that's it. But if you go, they got everything listed on the Instagram. So if you go to official TC Carson, you can get to me.
All right. And we're going to put all those links in our show notes and in the description below for all of our wonderful listeners to go and check out some of your work.
Please do. And we're working on so many great things this year. I'm working on a new album right now, and hopefully that'll be out before the end of the year. It is an album of jazz standards. And I think it's going to be great. I got a great band. We're also working on a new late night talk show with food called Uncle G Daddy's Kitchen. And if you next week, the sizzle reel up on Instagram, and if you go to Uncle G Daddy's Kitchen, you'll see the sizzle reel. So we're really pushing to get people to look at it and like it, and so we can get the show on.
I'm gonna go check that out the moment this interview ends.
Well, excellent, guys. If you've been listening and paying attention, there's a lot of stuff for you guys to go check out. Not only did he mention those things, but he also has a YouTube channel where you can go and do like I did, fall down the rabbit hole of TC's music. And it's a wonderful place to be. It's a lot of really honestly good music And yeah, so go check those out. Make sure you click follow, subscribe TC and everywhere he's at and what he's doing. But also click subscribe here. You know, the little button that John, our editor, is putting up on the screen right around here somewhere. Anyway.
See it. Wait a minute. Where is it? Where, I don't.
Oh, it's actually over here right now.
It's over there.
And if John, if we could put it over there now.
Over there?
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Wait, it's over here. Ah, okay.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
He's going to do that one. None of that.
Probably no. We're just going to look stupid looking into the camera, but that's what John does to me. Anyway. But yeah, be sure to click like and subscribe on this video. You doing that helps us out more than we can really ever say. It helps us get more amazing guests like the amazing TC Carson to come here and share some laughs with us. And we get to talk about wooden shoes and scare him with dinosaur facts. It's all good time. But go check out TC's work as well. And again, TC, thank you for cutting out some of your time for us today. And we really do appreciate you, sir. All right, guys. Thank you so much for listening and paying attention to the FSF Popcast. Goodbye.
Copyright 2024 FSF Popcast. Reference to any specific product or entity mentioned on this podcast does not constitute an endorsement or recommendation by FSF Popcast. The views expressed by guests are their own, and their appearance on the program does not imply an endorsement of them or any entity they represent. If you have any questions about this disclaimer, please contact us via email at info@fsfpopcast.com.